And you're listening to 91.7 FM WHUS. I am Fran Storch, and this is Radio Naturopath. And I'll be here for the next hour with you, talking about all sorts of cool stuff related to natural medicine. I am flying solo today, so if you would like to participate in the conversation, I invite you to do that. You would have to text me, though. You can text me at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. I would love to hear from you. And you can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. That's radionaturopath@gmail.com. And I would love to hear from you. All right. So let's talk about a few things that are interesting today. Yeah, summer is winding down. Everybody's saying it's the end of summer. Well, no, it's not. We've got until September 21st. I know we're losing light and it's kind of sad. We're kind of losing it at either end of the day. I was noticing it was 6 in the morning as I'm making my way out of thinking about getting out of bed and noticing that it was rather dark and not entirely happy about it. The returning of the darkness is an exciting thing for some people and not so much fun for others, because that loss of darkness, it means that you have to slow down. And one of the things that's concerning is that people tend to get involved in a lot of intense things in the autumn, and the light is coming in and the cold is coming. The light is reducing and the cold is coming, and your bodies naturally start to slow down. But your life kind of ramps up this time of year. And so that's not really the natural order of things, because you get very excited. It's almost like September is another sort of new year. There's the new year on January 1st, but September in our culture is a new year of sorts, because it's the beginning of the school year and a lot of things start over on September 1st, because we have the summer in the United States, which is when it's warm enough for people to feel like they're on vacation, and then that goes away. So people experience the summer differently than they experience September. And when it starts to cool off, people become more active in ways that they slowed down in the summer. And also you have this this fixed beginning of the school year, which affects everybody. And it affects everybody in a lot of ways. One of the ways that I see that it affects people is people start getting sick again. And, you know, it doesn't take long. I mean, you would think that people would get sick in the cold and flu season, and they will. But as soon as people start going back to school, whether it's universities or colleges or elementary school, the public school, I start to see people coming in sick. And they come in with colds and they come in with bronchitis. One of the things that I see at this time of year, the ragweed is fat and happy right now. So people are having a lot of ragweed allergies. And so they feel like they have a cold. And then they come in with infections, either sinus infections or bronchitis. And it's hard to tell whether they have a virus or they had allergies and now they have a superimposed bacterial infection. And and I see either one. And certainly when people start getting gang housed in schools, the germs start getting passed around. And there is a short window. I want to say, there's cold and flu season and July, some places they have two seasons, winter and July. Well, that's kind of what I see around here, because people still come in sick in June. And July and August, there's a lull, but I have seen people come in already with colds and bronchitis, which is pretty incredible. So since you're back in school, or since other people are back in school and you're interacting with them, it's a good idea to wash your hands a lot, use your hand sanitizer, scrub your hands. When you scrub your hands, make sure that you're scrubbing for at least 15 seconds. You can count to 15. You can sing Happy Birthday or the ABCs at a moderate pace, and that will take you about 15 seconds to do while you do it, and that'll make sure. And remember that more important than what substance you put on your hands is the fact that you scrub, because the actual scrubbing action is what gets the bacteria off your hands. The bacteria and the viruses and the little microorganisms will leave your hands if you scrub them. So make sure to spend about a good 15 seconds doing that and getting between your fingers and inside the little cracks in there and Yeah, get to it. Do drink plenty of water. If you have extra mucus in your body, if you thin the mucus, then it will come out more readily and you'll be happier that way. In the beginning of the school year, and then also do whatever you need to do for immunity. This is not a good idea. This is not a good time to stop eating produce. Produce is still amazing right now, and it'll be amazing through September and probably into October as well. It's still a great time to go to the farmers markets. Some of the foods will be changing. There's a lot of greens right now. The tomatoes are amazing right now. And you're going to get squash soon if you're not already. The greens, this is the time of year when the tables at the farmers markets are just piled high with cornucopias of all kinds of produce. And it's a great time of year to experience those things. I was talking with one of my staff, Amy, yesterday, who works over at Tobacco Road. And we were talking about how we are just so blessed with incredible farmers around here who are gifted with knowing how to tend the soil. They use compost. They use crop rotation. They use additions of minerals to the soil. And they tend the soil in such a way that the food is extremely nutritious. And we just wonder if our health is improved because we're eating the foods from these tables. I mean, if you really want to improve your health, one way to do it is to eat really healthy produce. And one way to do that is to go to the local farmers markets. The farmers around here, a lot of them have been trained by Brian O'Hara, who is brilliant and really knows how to tend to soil, and they know how to tend soil in an incredible way. I really believe that some of the best food in the world is right here in northeastern Connecticut. So if you're eating from the local farms, they really know what they're doing, and you're going to be healthier, not just from taking a pill or even getting rest is very important, but you don't necessarily have to take a supplement or a drug. All you have to do is have a feed of some healthy greens, and you're going to be a lot healthier. And just the incredible amounts of nutrients that are in these foods are going to help to keep you healthy, and they're going to help your immune. They're going to help you in every way. They're going to protect against cancer. They're going to give you good probiotics in your digestive system, because that's one of the things that happens. Healthy soil has a good proportion of soil organisms, and the soil organisms wind up being probiotics in your body, and you're going to get the benefit of those if you consume local produce. And so you get the probiotics, you get all kinds of phytochemicals and immune compounds, and you get antioxidants, things that are going to protect you against cancer, support your immune system, make it so that you get less colds, flus, viruses, all kinds of wonderful things. And whatever else you eat, if you're eating those things, it's really going to help. You're eating power foods, and you don't have to buy it in a box or a package at the store. You can just get it from your local farmer or at the farmer's market. It's an incredible thing to do. If you're worried about your immune system this time of year, eating local, fresh, organic produce, and not even necessarily certified organic, but the produce from the local farmers who use no pesticides and who use incredible farming techniques, your food is going to be really, really healthy, and your food will make you really, really healthy too. It's really incredible. So, and I'm finding that because I know that the pace is going to get more frenetic around here, one of the things I found is that I was traveling a fair bit in August. I traveled a couple of weekends in August, and in September, I don't have any traveling planned, and I think I need to keep it that way. Maybe day trips in state or to Rhode Island, which counts. You know, it's more stressful for me to go to, say, Bridgeport than it is for me to go to Westerly. I mean, Westerly's closer, and why would I go to Westerly? To enjoy Westerly, go to the beach, you know, that's okay with me. So I don't have to travel. I don't have to spend the night anywhere but home for the entire month of September, and I think that's something I may commit to. I'm not going to sleep anywhere but in my house, and that way I can get a little bit more rest. One of the things that I see in my business is that the schedule gets a little shaken up, and people who have businesses that require appointments, whether you're a physician's office or, you know, a massage therapist or physical therapist, or even I have to ask, I'm going to go have my hair done today. I find out the hairstylists and people who have their nails done, this is a funny time of year for that because people make and break appointments a lot because there's so much going on, and usually has to do with getting into the transitioning from the summer routine into the autumn routine. And then things settle down in late September, early October. Certainly by early October, people are setting into the routines. And then in early to mid-October, people start getting sad and not feeling well. And they start to suffer from the loss of the light and the advent of the cold and the dark. And so then my business gets a lot busier once I get into October. And this year, the high holidays are late. They start in October. They're entirely in the month of October. So I'm going to go to Florida in the first week of October. So that's why I'm going to be here entire month of September. Seeing if you can navigate this wave in a way that's more healthful for you. One of the ways to do it, like I said, is to eat that organic produce. And the other thing is to build in rest into whatever you do. So you heard it here. Rest makes everything better. And if you're very busy, building rest into building rest into your day is a great thing. Building rest into your life, building rest into your month, and just carving it out and scheduling it in is really important. And if you can schedule the rest during any part of the day, if you can, we were talking about how people don't take naps. And we were talking about how in other countries, if you go to to Mediterranean countries, they have the tradition of siesta, that halfway through the afternoon, they take a break. They take a two-hour break and they get rest. They might eat some food. They might hang out with their friends, but they stop working. They stop doing stuff in the middle of the afternoon because life is precious and it's not fun to work really hard from morning till evening and be exhausted and not be able to accomplish anything in the evening. You know, that I know for me that I have a lull mid-afternoon, and then I get a second wind later in the day. But it would be nice if I could rest in that mid-afternoon time, and that often doesn't happen. It's just not something that happens, unfortunately. And so building that rest in, even if you're at work, if you have 5 minutes that you can close your eyes and relax, or 5 minutes where you can do some kind of easy exercise, whether it's a stretch or some squats or any kind of body weight exercise, something that you can build in that's a break from what you're already doing. If you can get out and go for a walk, even if it's for 5 or 10 minutes, that can be refreshing and rejuvenating. That's really important to do. It's particularly important to do in the next month or two because we're transitioning from a time of year that naturally embraces us. It embraces us with a slower pace, and you have the outdoors embraces you. You can walk out into the outside and you don't have to wear extra clothing. You can just go with what you had on indoors and you can walk outside, and you're not bracing the elements. And so it's very gentle on your body and your system. I know some of you are saying, yeah, but it gets really, really hot. I know that that's true too. But still, you don't have to wear a heavy coat. You don't have to wear 5 layers. You can just go out in it. And even if you're not out in it for very long, you can drink water. You can cool off. There are ways to do that. But once you get into the darker, colder time of year, you have to deal with the fact there's less light. You have to deal with the fact that there's more elements. And you have to adjust to the outside. So it's not as embracing for us. You have to do things, the industrious things, to make it so that it's tenable to be outside. And so we're transitioning from that, the time of year where you have to work to maintain yourself. And, you know, and because of the school year, you're also working to start that school year. And a lot of us, you know, I'm sitting here in a university, so a lot of us work for that university, and we make that university go. So things get a lot busier. People hang out a lot more together. And, you know, you can wind up pushing yourself so hard and making yourself sick. And that's when I see people in October, November, pushing themselves. So, this transition it's a little bit, it's an exciting time of year. It also can be sad because you're letting go of the summer and you're letting go of that easy time of year that embraces you in that way, that sitting on the porch drinking your iced tea kind of time of year. So, and that can translate to sitting inside with the newspaper or the tablet and looking at the news on the tablet or the phone or the computer, because a lot of people don't do the newspaper anymore. We tend to do the newspaper once a week, but we don't do a lot of newspaper anymore. It's kind of sad how the world has changed. All right, so I want to remind you that if you would like to participate in the conversation, you can write me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. That's radionaturopath@gmail.com. You can text me at 860-486-9487, and I would be happy to answer your questions. All right, let's see if we can get onto some specific topics. So one of the things that I was asked about yesterday was eye floaters. You know that it's if you look up at a white surface or you look up into the sky, you can see stuff floating by, and it's not in the sky, it's in your eyes. If you all of a sudden have a lot of those, it can be a medical emergency, and you do need to go right to the ER, or at least to the ophthalmologist. It would be worth calling your ophthalmologist and say, hey, I all of a sudden have a lot of floaters. Can I have an emergency appointment? And they'll either tell you, yes, you can come in here, or they'll send you to the hospital. Because if you have a sudden onset of floaters, it can mean that you're having a retinal detachment or something's going wrong with your retina. The retina is the surface inside of your eye where you do focusing in your eye. And if your retina buckles or detaches, there's a danger you could lose your vision. So it is a medical emergency and you have to get looked at right away. And so that's important. If you then get checked out and found out, you just have some floaters and the floaters annoy you, well, there's some things that you can do about floaters, and there's some simple things you do. You have to make sure that you're well hydrated, because the more hydrated you are, any fluid that you have in your body is going to be less viscous. And so when things are less viscous, they flow better. And so the floaters tend to not flow through your eyes so fast, and they tend to go back to where, you know, and set where they're supposed to set. But if you drink a lot of water, you might have less problems with them. You can also increase circulation to your eyes by just doing warm compresses over your eyes. And if you do warm compresses, you can do them just with straight up water. That'll increase circulation to the area. And you can also soak the warm compresses in eyebright tea. You can get eyebright. You can get tea bags with this lovely herb called eyebright. Eyebright is wonderful. It's a specific for the eye. It helps with circulation and has nutrients that support eye health. And you can soak the compresses in warm eyebright tea. You just make, it's because eyebright, you use the aerial parts. So you're going to take the tea bags and you're going to steep them. And if you steep them, it's probably a good idea to steep them for a long time, maybe an hour. And then if you have to warm the tea back up, you can do that gently on the stove. And then you get compresses and wring out the compresses in the eyebright tea and you put them on your eyes and you relax. It's very nice. And so that's a nourishing treatment for the eyes. And then there's lots of supplements you can take that support eye health and will support circulation in the eyes. And support the health of the rods and the cones. There's a lot of vitamin A in the rods and the cones. And so when you consume vitamin A or beta carotene, which is a precursor to vitamin A, you're going to be supporting eye health. So eating your high carotenoid foods are going to, your spinach is a wonderful thing to have regularly. Spinach is going to have beta carotene and other carotenoids. It also has lutein and zeaxanthin in it. Lutein and zeaxanthin are really important for eye health. And that's something you can take in pills, and you can also, you just get it from your food. If you go get that wonderful organic produce that we were talking about in your squash, in your leafy greens, they're going to have lots of lutein and zeaxanthin. Spinach is particularly high in lutein and zeaxanthin, so it's a really a good choice. There's lutein in corn too, and if you're not allergic to organic corn, the organic corn is beautiful right now. Corn is still in season, and if you have a problem eating some corn on the cob, make sure it's non-GMO, and you can get that and you get corn, and it has But that certainly has zeaxanthin in it, because the zea is corn. Zea is Latin for corn. The Latin name for corn is zea maize. So you improve your eye health with corn. I don't recommend eating tons of corn, but eating local, organic, non-GMO corn, and eating it right off the cob, if you don't have a problem with it, then that's a nice thing to do. If you're allergic to it, of course, don't do it. But eating your produce is going to help with eye health. And there's other produce that helps with eye health, and it's all your berries and cherries. The anthocyanins are wonderful antioxidants, and they strengthen the tiny blood vessels in your eyes. And so that's going to help with your eye health as well. And like I said, if you have those floaters, it can help to minimize the amount of floaters you have. You can get more floaters if you have amyloid illness as well. If you have amyloidosis, that you make too much amyloid in your body and perhaps in your brain. So if you're getting a lot of floaters and they're really interfering with your vision, that's something to talk to the ophthalmologist with. And it's also you may have to see a neurologist about that. So that was an interesting thing. Like I said, if you have immediate floaters and you have them all of a sudden and you see stuff in front of your eyes, it can be an emergency. And the first thing to do is to call the ophthalmologist and see if they can get you in. And if not, they may send you to the ER to make sure that you don't have a retinal detachment. So please do take that seriously. All right. So that was an interesting piece on eye health. I was reading something interesting about the CPAP. You know how you can get diagnosed with sleep apnea. And sleep apnea is a concerning condition. Sleep apnea is where you go to sleep, and as you're sleeping, as you're falling asleep, you all of a sudden stop breathing. And it can be aggravated by certain conditions. If you're very heavy, if you're obese, you can have an issue with sleep apnea. And if you, and some people have it and they don't know why they have it. And so they have to be treated for it. But frequently it's people with inflammation, with respiratory issues, it's people who have obesity issues. And sometimes there's not a good reason why. I have a patient who's not obese and who's very fit and has it. His sleep apnea wakes up suddenly, you know. So the way it gets diagnosed, first of all, somebody notices that it's happening. If you sleep with a partner of some sort, somebody notices that you stop breathing and that you keep waking up, and they might tell you about it. The other way it's noticed, if you don't sleep with a partner, you just notice that you're very tired all the time, and you go to your doctor and tell them, I'm tired all the time, and they'll try to figure it out, and you tell them that you wake up and you feel like a truck ran over you. So they say, all right, you're going to have a sleep study. And so they do this neat thing where you go, the sleep study is a sleep electroencephalogram, and you go to sleep in a sleep lab. And they put electrodes on you to measure your brain activity. And then they can tell you what's going on with your brain activity while you're sleeping. And they can find out what's going on, they can tell you if you're having seizure activity, and they can tell you if you stop breathing. So, because they measure all of that. And if they find that you do, in fact, have sleep apnea, the word means, pnea means breathing. And, pnea is something that your pneumo does, your pneumo being your lung, and pnea is what you breathe. So apnea means you're not breathing. Hypopnea means that you're underbreathing. You can have hyperpnea too, which means you're excessively breathing, but we usually say hyperventilation. But hyperpnea is another way to say it. Dyspnea means you have erratic breathing. You're not breathing in a way that's good for you. It just, you know, it's like dysfunction, dyspnea, bad breathing, something like that. So so apnea means you stop breathing. And the bad thing is that you're supposed to go through four stages of sleep. Stage one, stage two, stage three, which is your very deep restorative sleep, and REM, follow me, don't follow me, I got my, all right, I'll stop. And REM, rapid eye movement sleep, or a band from Georgia. Anyway, so rapid eye movement sleep is you're supposed to go through several cycles of that a night. You go through two or three of those cycles per night, and you might find that you wake up after your cycle of REM because it is not such it's not such deep sleep. And also, you can dream at any stage of sleeping, but you tend to have your most vivid dreams in REM sleep. And REM sleep is very important to health because that's when you have your most vivid dreams, your probably your most meaningful dreams, and the dreams that you tend to remember. And dreaming is very important. And boy, that's a profound statement, isn't it? You know, we talk about how a lot of Americans are sleep deprived because we work so hard, we work many hours, we don't take naps, we don't take rest, and then we try to go to sleep. We use stimulants to keep us awake, and then our sleep is interrupted by many things, by the fact that we took the stimulants during the day, the fact that we're so busy that we don't get the hours in for the sleep. And people have children who come and join them in the bed, or people have young children. Women have children who are still nursing, so the children interrupt them. Some people have pets that interrupt them during the night. So people have different reasons why their sleep is interrupted. So they can have trouble sleeping. People are simply anxious because they have so much going on in their lives that they have a hard time relaxing. People have various conditions. They have inflammatory conditions. Inflammatory conditions, if you have inflammation, inflammation raises your cortisol. Cortisol, if you have any inflammation in your body anywhere, cortisol is going to be around to support your immune system to deal with the inflammation. So that can affect your sleep. So we have so many reasons why our sleep can be affected. And if you don't sleep well, you're going to have trouble dreaming. And dreaming at a very basic level is a way that your brain processes stuff. It synthesizes things that happen during your life. It synthesizes memories and information that you have learned. And it's also a detox for storage stuff. It helps to sort things out in your head. If you don't get to do that, it's really bad for your health, body, mind, and spirit. But think of the esoteric ramifications of not getting to dream. Part of our existence is dreaming and planning and creating in our minds. That's one of the things that makes us human. Dreaming stuff up, thinking about stuff, synthesizing stuff, creating. Your creativity comes from dreaming. You know, and from your ability to imagine something in your mind and then bring it into reality. If you never have time to do that, you never have time to synthesize, then something is lost in your life. Your life, you become robotic, basically. You're not getting to experience the fullness of your life. So that's why sleeping is so important. And it's really sad that we have a lifestyle in this country where we're a lot of us feel like we have to work many hours to get a lot of work done and to make money and to support ourselves in life. I see people working several different jobs just to make money and save up money and just wearing themselves out, making themselves really tired and not necessarily getting the sleep that they need around it. You know, that some people simply just don't sleep enough hours because they don't have the time to do it. And I am certainly a person who does better with somewhere between 8 and 9 hours of sleep. I'm a longer sleeping kind of person, where Ron, he can sleep probably 6 or 7 hours and be okay. And I cannot. 6 hours is, I'm not going to be a happy camper the next day. And less than that, even worse. And sometimes that's what happens because I get home late and I have to get up early in the morning to do something else. But I usually have to catch up on it at some other point in the week. But sleeping is something that makes you smart. It's something that helps your cognitive ability because it helps you to synthesize memories and thoughts and important stuff. So it is so important. And so the scary thing about sleep apnea is you start to fall asleep and you're in that stage one phase of sleep, that first stage of sleep, and you wake up and then you start to fall asleep again and you wake up and you fall asleep again and you wake up and you never get past phase one. It's bad. It's bad. So that's why people get diagnosed with sleep apnea. And the solution for sleep apnea is this thing called the CPAP. And the CPAP, it is constant positive airway pressure. There's also a thing called a BiPAP, which is positive airway pressure in two directions. So airway pressure, the constant airway pressure is they're pushing air into your lungs. Where the BiPAP, it goes two directions. It goes in and it pulls air out as well. And so anyway, what these devices do is they ensure that you're continuing to breathe. And hopefully you're able to keep this device on all night. But there were studies that were done that showed that people don't keep the CPAP on. They maybe have the CPAP on for 3 hours in a night. And so it helps them with their sleep for that amount of time. But people, the thing is, the CPAP is a funny thing because you have to wear a mask. You have these nasal pillows where you have these cannulae in your nose, and then you have to keep a mask on. And you have this machine, and the machine makes noise. And it's this incredible scenario. There's all these people in this country that are using this machine. Now, for some people, this machine is life-saving. It really works for them, and it makes it so they can sleep. But the studies show they don't keep it on. Most people don't keep it on all night. People don't like it. People wake up, and the thing is across the room. It's a very strange thing that, you know, you'll sleep, and you instinctively find something on your face, and you try to get it off you, and you don't realize that you're taking your CPAP off. But that's what people do, because who likes to have a thing on their face when they're sleeping? And instinctively, you don't. I mean, when we were in the wild, if a thing was on your face, it could be something trying to eat you, or something trying to smother you and then eat you, whatever. So that's what we think of instinctually, and we try to get it off. So, is there something you can do? So one of the things, of course, if somebody comes in and they're like, I really have sleep apnea and I don't want to have to use the CPAP. Well, we have to treat the cause and see what's going on. Is the person obese? Does the person have inflammation? Does the person have sinus issues? Do they have breathing issues? Do they have asthma? So you treat whatever the cause is. And in naturopathic medicine, we like to do that. Treating the cause is one of our six basic principles. So you have them come in and you do a basic assessment of their entire health and find out what's going on. If it's asthma, you know, you treat their food intolerances. You give them herbs. You give them anti-inflammatory agents like fish oil, things that calm the breathing like magnesium. And magnesium can be helpful because, you know, magnesium is an extremely important mineral that a lot of people are deficient in because they're not going to the farmers markets and eating those wonderful organic green vegetables, which you can get magnesium from those things. All right. And so when people are deficient in magnesium because they're eating too much processed food that they're eating often causes inflammation, especially if you're eating a highly starchy diet. And that starchy diet includes a lot of modern wheat. So, of course, we look at the diet and help you to get back to a diet that's basically lots of produce, clean protein, nuts and seeds if you're not allergic to them, and reasonable amounts of dairy if you're not allergic to that. Remember, dairy is not necessary to life if you are not a suckling baby, okay? You don't ever have to eat dairy. Dairy is a choice. You heard that here. Grains basically are a choice as well. And I'm not saying don't ever eat dairy, don't ever eat grains. I'm saying that these are foods that are optional, and you can figure out whether you really need to eat them or not. That the things that are not optional are produce and protein. And whatever kind of produce and protein that you choose, that's up to you. And everybody's a little bit different in as to what produce and protein works for them. But if your basis of your diet is not produce protein, you could have health issues, and it's likely that you have inflammation. So whatever inflammatory condition you have, an inflammation can bring on sleep apnea. And the sleep apnea could be because your respiratory passages are inflamed. So you have a situation where your palate is fluffy and closes while you're sleeping. And it's because it's puffy, it's inflamed. And so you can get it unpuffy by reducing inflammation. You know, and how do you do that? By eating better, by getting exercise, by getting good sleep, by getting good rest, by taking some supplements, fish oil. If you have allergies, nettles can be helpful. Ibrac can be helpful. Vitamin C can be helpful. Quercetin can be helpful. There's a lot of nice things you can do to reduce allergy symptoms. So we treat allergies and asthma somewhat similarly, and then there are some things that are better for the lower respiratory tract, and there are some things that are better for the upper respiratory tract. And so we give various herbs for those. If your issue is that you are overweight. So we talk about that. And in my experience, fat loss is very difficult for people. It is the rare patient who successfully loses fat and keeps it off. Once in a while, someone does, but it's something that people struggle with. If you, whatever factors brought you to a place where you have a lot of weight on, it's not something I can go home and follow you around and change for you. I have lots of things I can talk to people about, lots of tools that I can offer you. I have recipes, I have things that I can tell you, and I can certainly help to inspire you. But, you know, there is, to quote Mark Percival, who's a nice naturopathic physician in Ontario, there's nothing the doctor that can do that can replace what the patient will not. So naturopathic medicine is about what you will do. In fact, medicine in general, never mind naturopathic medicine, it's about what you will do for your own health. Health really is about you. Our job is to give you good coaching, good care, good support, and good inspiration, but you have to go home and take care of yourself. That's what you have to do. And you have to find out if whatever your challenges are, I can talk you through and try to help you meet your challenges. And I can at least make you feel better about what's going on, which can help you to go home and help with your challenges. But finding out, treating the cause and helping you to get to sleep in a way that works better for you is a great thing. So sleep apnea particularly is a tough one because of how people stop sleeping. And it's usually about inflammation. It can be about obesity, and obesity often has inflammation embedded in it. So we help with all of those things, and often we can help people, we can help people at least to an extent. So one of the things that I was reading about with the CPAP is that the CPAP wasn't helping people as much as they thought with cardiovascular disease. Because one of the concerns is that with stopping breathing like that, you're ultimately, it's going to affect your cardiovascular health because the relationship between the lungs and the heart, you're going to have, if you don't get enough oxygen, your heart's not going to beat properly. You can get arrhythmias and you can, it can affect your heart, and people get cardiovascular disease. They're more likely to have heart attacks. And so they found that the CPAP didn't improve the rate of heart attack, that there wasn't much difference in the rate of heart attacks between people who used a CPAP and people who didn't. And so that was pretty interesting. What they did find is that people who have sleep apnea and use the CPAP do tend to sleep better. They sleep a little better. They're less tired. And they have less daytime sleepiness. So it does help. It does help you to sleep better if you use it properly. And the reason that it may not be helping so much with cardiovascular disease may be because it doesn't really help. And it may also be because people take it off after 3 hours. So they're not wearing it through the night. And so they're not getting the full benefit that they might get if they manage to keep the whole thing off. So it's kind of interesting. So I think it's worth checking out natural medicine. If you have sleep apnea, it's worth checking out and seeing if natural medicine has something to offer you, because it may. And it's one of those things that it's not a simple answer, because it depends what the cause of your sleep apnea is. And if it's just a brain thing, that you're a healthy person and you don't particularly have allergies, we can work on that too. We can help your brain function to improve. And that's where you get into, again, your magnesium, your fish oil. Reduce inflammation. Make sure you're getting exercise. There's a lot of things that can help with brain function. Fat is big for that. And eating good quality fats is really important. So, all right. So that's CPAPs and sleep apnea. Okay. So here's another interesting piece. I had, not too long ago, I had someone come into my office, a girl, I guess I would say a few, children come in who, parents were keeping them off gluten because they were gluten intolerant. And unfortunately, even if you do something healthy, like get the gluten out of your diet, people still tend to overstarch. And I try to beg people, you got to eat your veggies, your protein and produce. You heard me say it. Protein and produce are really important. And when you eat a variety of protein and produce, will pull a variety of minerals from the soil. And you're not going to be overdoing any one thing. Although if you eat green vegetables, you'll get a lot of magnesium, which is a good thing. Okay. So anyway, there was a concern about people eating rice and that rice bioaccumulates arsenic. So guess what? It kind of does. And if you're eating a lot of rice, arsenic may well be a concern. So if you're someone who eats rice every day, it might be worth doing even just a random arsenic challenge. Because what I did, so here's the thing with heavy metals. Heavy metals get sequestered in your body. Your body doesn't like you to have heavy metals in your body. So it looks at them and says, all right, we're going to store this places. One of the places it's going to go is your bones, because bones have a good exchange for metals, you know, for divalent or univalent cations. It has a system for taking on minerals because your bones are made of them. Your bony matrix is made of minerals. It's made mostly of calcium and magnesium, but it's got other stuff in it too. It's got manganese and boron as well. And you have this system. So you do tend to sequester heavy metals in your bones. You sequester them in your organs as well. Your liver and kidneys are a place where your body will store heavy metals. Your body does have systems to dump the heavy metals as well. That's why you have detoxifying enzymes like glutathione and sulfation, sulfur-bearing compounds, and cysteine, methionine, glutathione, and sulfates tend to, they're negatively charged, and they tend to pull on positively charged ions like your heavy metals and other minerals, and they can help to pull them out of your body. So if you eat extra sulfur-bearing things, where are you going to get sulfur-bearing things? A lot of produce has sulfur in it. So if you eat anything in the mustard family, it's got sulfur in it. So a lot of your leafy greens are going to have sulfur compounds in them. Your onions and garlic, lots of sulfur compounds in them. So it helps with detoxification. Eggs have sulfur compounds in them. And clean animal protein is going to have sulfur, because all protein has quaternary structure, has four levels of structure, and the fourth level of structure is disulfide bonds. So if you eat animal protein, you're going to get sulfur. Yes. So it's not too hard to get sulfur from eating natural foods. And that sulfur is going to help you to detoxify heavy metals. And so some of you are saying, but I'm allergic to sulfur. Well, no, you're not. If you were allergic to sulfur, you would be reacting to your own skin. So stop. If you are thinking I'm allergic to sulfur, you're not. You're allergic to sulfa, S-U-L-F-A, and that is a shorthand for sulfonamide antibiotics. Okay, so you're allergic to trimethoprim, ceftriaxone, Bactrim, okay, and sulfamethoxazole. So you're allergic to specific antibiotics. You are not allergic to the mineral sulfur. That just can't happen because your sulfur mineral is part of your body. Okay, so now that we got that cleared up, this is what I saw. I did a random challenge, which means that the people simply did a 24-hour urine collection, and then we assessed it for a level of various heavy metals. And one of the metals we checked for was arsenic, and we found that there was arsenic. And so I asked one of the families, "So, do you eat a lot of rice?" And they said, "Oh yes, every day." I'm like, "All right, stop that. Can you eat more produce and protein? Do you have to eat that much grain? Because I may not have to do that much to get the heavy metals out of this person's body, except, you know, have them get off eating so much rice. Certain varieties of rice bioaccumulate less arsenic, and basmati is one of them. So if you do like to eat rice, choosing basmati could be a good thing. In our house, we have not been eating a lot. Well, I don't eat as much rice as Ron does. When we have stir fries, I tend to go for quinoa. And most nights we have salad and protein, so we don't even have grain necessarily with our meals. And I've been choosing einkorn pasta, so I haven't been getting the rice that way. Ron will choose rice pasta over that, and then Ron eats the gluten-free bread. So if you are avoiding gluten, there can be you can be eating actual rice, and you can also be eating rice in gluten-free grain products. So you can wind up eating a lot of rice. And it's, if you don't feel right and you're gluten-free, it might be worthwhile checking to see if you're bioaccumulating arsenic. And this was a case where, so because the heavy metals bioaccumulate in tissues, you don't, and they're stored there, you don't always see them coming out. So if you do a random urine challenge, or you do a 6-hour urine challenge, or you collect urine for 24 hours, you might not see the heavy metals. So the thing you have to do is give a chelation challenge. And naturopathic physicians used to be able to get a substance called DMSA, dimercaptosuccinic acid, over the counter. It was a supplement. We can't anymore. It became a prescribed pharmaceutical. And as you know, as we talked about last week, in the state of Connecticut, naturopathic physicians don't have prescriptive authority. So we can't get our hands on DMSA anymore. However, all is not lost. If you, first of all, it could be worthwhile simply doing a 24-hour urine challenge. Any doctor can order it for you. You just collect your urine for 24 hours. Yeah, they give you a jug, and you have to take it to the lab, and then they'll test it for you, and you'll see if there's arsenic in it. If you don't see arsenic in it and you're still concerned, then you have to hook up with a holistic prescribing doc. And there are holistic centers now where you have naturopathic physicians practicing alongside osteopathic physicians or holistically oriented nurse practitioners. So there are a couple of those in the state. I am not one of them, unfortunately. And there's also holistically oriented doctors who practice with or without naturopathy. A lot of times these clinics that have holistically oriented MDs or osteopaths or APRNs also have naturopathic physicians in them. So there's places in Massachusetts like that where the MDs are very much believers in natural medicine, and they'll do chelation challenges for you, and they'll be able to prescribe DMSA for you, and you can do a 24-hour urine challenge. And then there's clinics where you can actually go, and they use a substance that's similar to DMSA but is done IV, called DMPS. And DMPS, they give it IV, and then you do a urine challenge after being given the DMPS, and they see if you've pushed out heavy metals in that way. And if you see the heavy metals, you can get treated to help remove the metals. And there are numerous ways to do that. Again, a holistic doc can prescribe DMSA to you, and you can do a DMSA detox where you would take the chelating agent for a few days. And then DMSA doesn't care. It will take out any minerals. So you have to replace the good minerals. So that's why you do it. You cycle through it. You do 3 days of the DMSA and 11 days of detoxification, where you do nice sulfur-bearing compounds that are not DMSA, and you support your liver, and you replace the good quality minerals that you have taken out with the DMSA. And you do a bunch of cycles of that, and eventually you pull the heavy metals out of your body. You can also do IV chelation, where you sit on an IV and they push DMPS through you, and you get the minerals taken out that way. And then when you're not, and you do that maybe once a week for a long time, and then you replenish in between, and that's a way to do that. But it did concern me that I saw a kid who had this kid, when we did the test, they had arsenic come out, and we didn't even do a challenge. It was just a non-challenged urine collection. And the person had arsenic, and they were, in fact, eating a lot of rice. So I'm not saying rice is terrible. I'm saying you may want to watch it. And it doesn't matter if it's organic or not. Bioaccumulation is bioaccumulation. And if you're eating too much of one food anyway, that's an issue. It's a really good idea to mix up what you eat, because then you get exposed to different proteins, different nutrients, different antigens. And if you're eating rice every single day, it could be an issue. And it's not because, you know, there's tons of arsenic in the soil. There might be more arsenic in the soil if you're using pesticides, but not necessarily. It's just that certain plants bioaccumulate certain things. And if you're overeating any one plant, you could wind up getting stuff that you're bioaccumulating, that it bioaccumulates. And arsenic, unfortunately, is a problem for rice. So it's a good idea to look at the possibility of eating other grains, or don't eat so much grain. And the other thing is, if you are gluten-free, and the way that you're gluten-free is by eating a lot of starchy gluten-free items, that's not so good for you. We really need to look at eating protein and produce and not eating so much starch. You know how I feel about overstarching. It causes inflammation and you lose out on other minerals. So it's problematic. All right. So that was the arsenic thing. That was pretty interesting. All right. So now I have a new favorite thing that maybe you want to hear about. I don't know if I talked about it yet, but it's the black seed. Yeah. Really nice. What is black seed? It's Nigella sativa. It's black cumin. It kind of tastes like cumin. It's kind of cool. If you see what it looks like little tiny black stones. And it's kind of interesting tasting. I think I want to get it as an herb and just use it on food. Some people call it a remedy for everything but death. Which is kind of cute. So it will keep you alive. And turmeric is kind of like that too, but we're going to focus on the black seed today. So I've been enjoying taking some black seeds. So one of the things you might not know about me, I don't know if you noticed, but I'm kind of excitable. And I have inherited my excitability from one Ronnie Rothbaum Storch, who is my mom. And so my mom was a very accomplished person, or I should say she is a very accomplished person. And where she is also an educator, I chose to become a physician and to educate you about natural medicine and teach people one at a time. My mother's thing was to be in the public school system. So my mother was a teacher and a content specialist and an organizer of people. And ultimately, when she retired, she had worked her way up and she was a principal of a school. So my mom and I are both kind of caregivers. We like to take care of people and we're both pretty kind of smart, you know. And we both have very active brains that hold a lot of stuff in them. And my mother loves to read. I also love to read. I don't think I read as much as she does because I'm much busier than she is. She's retired, so she reads tons. And I know that once I am able to retire, I will also read tons because I love to read. I really, really enjoy it. I find it very relaxing and I love to learn stuff and I love to accumulate knowledge and I'm good at accumulating knowledge. The thing is, you know, we're excitable and we care about a lot of stuff and we are very busy with doing a lot of stuff. So we get high blood pressure. So we are the classic, picture of getting high blood pressure because we have a hard time relaxing and we have we're just, you know, thinking about so many things. And so I've inherited that from her. Sometimes I take my blood pressure and it's a little higher than I would like it to be. So it's been a little bit borderline at times when I measure it. And then a lot of times it's not. And you would think, oh, but Fran, you're so physically active. Yes, I am. That's true. But you have to remember the sport that I do, I spend once a week with a lot of time in the saddle and I'm sitting in a cortisol bath and that causes inflammation. So I have to work on the inflammation there. And then I have to work on protecting myself against the inflammation of being stressed. And so running a business is stressful, especially when you're running a business where you have a lot of appointments and you're being a caregiver. It's stressful. And I care about what I do. I'm actively involved. I try to be as low key as I possibly can be, but there's only so low key I can be when I have a stack of charts that's pretty much touching the ceiling. And so one of my challenges is I need to keep my blood pressure in check. And I'm hoping to do that without having to take a blood pressure med one day. My mother does take a blood pressure med and that works for her. She takes a little blood pressure med and she's happy and it helps her life. I'm concerned about that. So I started looking around to see what could help me. And of course, I've talked about taking motherwort tincture, which I do. I'm taking that every day. Classic cardio tonic. It's very benign. You can give it to anyone. You can give it to children. You can give it to adults. It doesn't only help with your heart. It is a cardio tonic, but it also functions as a nervine. It's calming. And so I take that and I think it's very helpful. Often if I'm having one of the things when you're in menopause, which I am, you're more likely to get high blood pressure and you're more likely to get palpitations because you don't have the estrogen and the progesterone making the tissues nice and soft and resilient. So you're more likely to get palpitations and you're more likely to get issues with your heart and your blood vessels. So you need stuff to calm them down so you don't overuse them. So I'm doing a lot of things. I take Hawthorn solid extract, which is a very benign, lovely herb that is a cardiotonic. It makes your heart beat more regularly and more efficiently. And then the motherwort is calming. And you can use motherwort for anxious children or, you know, anyone who's overly excitable. They don't have to have a heart problem. You can use it like you would use a Nervine. But it's perfect if you're someone whose blood pressure is up because you're anxious and nervous. So it can be really helpful for that. Of course, I take magnesium pills as well as eat lots of green stuff. So I do both of those. I love to have green stuff. And once in a while, I have green juice, which is a great way to, when the greens are pulverized, you're just going to get inside the greens. And I prefer green juice with the, I don't want the fiber extracted. I want what's inside the green juice because that's a really great way to get the greens inside you. So I don't do that every day, but once in a while I'll have some of that. I do have a green powder most days as well, and that helps too. One of the things that I'm interested in, as I said, this Nigella sativa. So I started, I read a study where there was actually a study in PubMed where they gave people 5 milliliters a day of Nigella sativa oil to take. And people had a significant drop in their blood pressure. So I said, all right, I could do that. And I got some Nigella sativa oil. And what's 5 milliliters? 5 milliliters is a teaspoon. So I get a teaspoon, put the Nigella sativa oil in a teaspoon, and I eat it. And it tastes pretty interesting. Does not taste like fish or fish oil at all. It's oily. It tastes a little minty, a little savory. And then when you swallow it, it has a spicy finish, which is why I would really like to get the herb and start putting it on my food because I want to see how it makes my food taste. It seems like it would be, like regular cumin, not black cumin, the yellow cumin, that you would put it on your fish or you'd put it on your meat or you put it on your chicken and it would be good. So I'm going to try that. And it tastes like it would be a good pair with turmeric, might be a good pair with garlic. Any of your neat savory spice mixes, it might be really nice. I bet it would be really good with sage and garlic. Because sage, I really like sage as a spice on things. And sage, of course, has its own benefits. It's antimicrobial, and it's another kind of a tonic. But so this black cumin is really incredible. It has these neat compounds in it. It has, there's amazing benefits to it. It's because it's a great anti-inflammatory. It's a great anti-inflammatory because it's antimicrobial and anti-inflammatory. And it also apparently is anti-cancer. And there's a lot of references that it kills all these different kinds of cancer. And it helps with brain damage, radiation damage, protects against damage from heart attacks, protects you from having a heart attack. Helps you if you have Alzheimer's disease, suppresses breast. It's really just, like I said, it kills everything except people. So it's really interesting. But there was what really got me excited was this one study that I read about where people were taking a teaspoon a day and had significant drops in their blood pressure. So I'm going to be taking it regularly. And some people tend to harbor fungus worse than others. And that's a genetic thing. And I'm one of those people. Thank you, Dad. And my dad and I, our bodies like fungus. And so that means athlete's foot. That means toenail fungus. That means increased yeast infections. So I'm going to see if this, if the black seed oil helps to calm the my tendency towards getting fungal infections. The other thing I may try is to try making a salve out of it and putting it on topically or finding a black seed oil salve and using it topically. So you know what? We've got a minute left. There's so much more on black seed oil. I may come back to it next week. So in the meantime, you're listening to 91.7 FM, WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath for the last hour. I have been flying solo, and I will not be flying solo next week, which will be very nice. Ron will be back. He had an important meeting in Boston, so I hope he's okay up there. And so we'll be back next week with more Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM.